When it comes to the decision of which technologies will be tried or which will work on the farm, obviously it's the farmer that's the ultimate decision maker. But a major influence in these types of decisions are advisors. People like crop consultants, retailers, and others who spent years, in most cases, building trust with their farmer customers.
We want to be part of the biggest decisions growers have to make. You know, what am I going to plant? How am I going to raise that crop? How am I keeping my land healthy and making sure that my business is sustainable so I can hand it down to the next generation?
That's Amy Tasing with Wilbur Ellis. In her role as president of Ag Solutions and CTO, she spends a lot of time thinking about innovation, strategy, and the impact of technology on their business and the future of agriculture.
We have 500 agronomists that are walking the fields every day. As we're thinking about how to help them be more effective and work with our growers, something like AgPilot, where they can use that interface to be able to get the information they need around the grower and the history, it's just an easy way for them to engage in that technology, which might be more practical if you think about the rural environment which we operate than somebody who's sitting behind a desk with a keyboard looking this information up.
Serving farmer customers and ag tech's impact on ag retail, all on today's Future of Agriculture podcast. Well, hello, fellow Ag Nerd. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Future of Agriculture. My name is Tim Hamrich, and every week you and I get to hear from the founders, farmers, innovators, and investors, the people shaping the future of the ag industry. Before we dive into today's episode with Amy Tasing, I want to take just a moment to thank our quarterly presenting sponsor, which this quarter is Headstorm, engineering growth for the farms of tomorrow. Headstorm is a full-service technology consultancy with been there, done that knowledge and expertise in the ag industry. The team at Headstorm knows which digital strategies work and which ones don't work based on the competitive landscape across broad acre, specialty, and animal ag industries. Headstorm provides a holistic and actionable technology roadmap that bridges the gap between strategy and implementation. From inception to execution, they help you play your strengths, mitigate your weaknesses, and make technology your unfair advantage. Learn more at headstorm.com. That's their website, headstorm.com. I'll leave a link for it in the show notes. And thank you to Headstorm for supporting Ag Innovation and the Future of Agriculture podcast. All right, now back to today's featured conversation with Amy Tasing, President of Ag Solutions and Chief Technology Officer at Wilbur Ellis. Today's episode is a perfect compliment to last week's episode with Brad Fruth of Bex Hybrids. Both Bex and Wilbur Ellis are well-established, family-owned companies that aren't just resting on their laurels, weren't just relying on a history of success. They're looking ahead, they're looking forward, and they want to be on the cutting edge of technology and innovation. Like last week's episode, the perspective Amy is about to share with you is both grounded in the realities of how agriculture really works in the real world today, but also is forward looking and open to how the industry is evolving and changing and wants to be a leader in that evolution. In Amy's role, she wears three different hats. Number one is strategy and business development for the company as a whole. Number two is running their ag solutions business, which includes digital solutions, but also sustainable grower solutions and their proprietary products portfolio. And it's there that she really focuses on innovation and on the future. And then the third function is the IT function. So how they're using digital and data internally as a company. So it's a big job for the 103-year-old Wilbur Ellis, which is a leading international marketer and distributor of agricultural products, animal nutrition, and specialty chemicals and ingredients. I was actually introduced to Amy from Headstorm as part of their quarterly presenting sponsorship. I offer to do some spotlights on their customers to really show the type of work they're doing. I don't usually use these spotlights as full episodes. They either end up on the end of another episode or as a field report segment if it's actually kind of farm-based technology. But in this case, they introduced me to Amy, who I would have loved to have on the show anyway, and I decided to make a full episode out of it. So when you hear references to Headstorm, that's the reason why, and gives you a little bit of background there. But the full episode is certainly worth your while if you're interested at all in the future of agriculture. Amy joined Wilbur Ellis in 2020, bringing a deep strategy, commercial, and general management background to her role, along with her expertise that spans food, agribusiness, and technology industries. Before Wilbur Ellis, Taysing held a variety of leadership roles at Cargill, where she developed and executed solutions for farmers, including new product development. Most recently, she was Vice President of Strategy, Marketing, and Innovation for Cargill's protein business in Latin America, Europe, and Asia. She created the first global strategy and acquisition portfolio across these regions, identified the critical levers for aggressive organic and M&A growth, and subsequently took responsibility for go-to-market and innovation improvement efforts. I don't always read everyone's bio, but hers is so impressive that I wanted to get it right. Really cool experience at Cargill, and now very, very interesting role at Wilbur Ellis. That's actually where I'm going to drop you into the conversation today, which is where Amy is talking about her valuable experience at Cargill and how that set her up for her current role at Wilbur Ellis. Now, just one quick technical note. This is another interview I recorded at World Agritech, so there were a lot of other people around, and there might be some background noise you'll pick up on in this interview, but it's worth a listen nonetheless. Here's my conversation with Amy Taysing.
So I didn't grow up in agriculture. I came to it late. So I did business technology and distribution services, but in office products, right? So entry into Cargill was really my first opportunity to understand, what's happening with the grower and what does it mean to actually decide to plant a crop and harvest it and do that again and again and again. And so I learned a lot. I joined their what they call the heart and the start, their original business, the grain elevator business that had grain origination, risk management, agronomics, et cetera. So working with growers was my start in agriculture.
Kind of local retail type.
You got it. And so that was a fantastic opportunity for me in the U.S. to learn, to sit across the kitchen table, to talk to farmers and hear about what they're thinking about, to get inside of the planter with them and, ride the field. To experience that, understand a grain elevator, grain trading, commodities, how the whole thing works. So fantastic baseline or foundational. Then I got the opportunity to actually spend a couple years with Cargill in Eastern Europe leading that business. And so how do you think about that across seven countries and, very different cultural elements, but at the same time, I learned farmers are farmers and trying to grow a crop and wanting to do that and, being successful and dealing with Mother Nature and all of the wild cards that can get thrown at you and just another way to experience that in a different part of the world. So fantastic learning opportunity again. And then when I came back to the U.S., got the chance to spend even more time in our animal protein business. So Cargill gave me really my introduction in agriculture, appreciation for the complexity. And the kind of a taste of the excitement that comes from an industry that's changing and innovative and has a lot of technology, whether it's product technology or digital technology, that's coming to market in a relatively condensed period of time, right? We've been farming for thousands of years. We haven't been talking about data for that long comparatively.
Was your background in, I know it was in strategy, but were you dealing with a lot of technology before this role?
Great question, because I didn't grow up in IT. And so that's usually the first question. How did you end up with IT? While I didn't grow up in IT, I've always been interested in sort of pushing the envelope on what's new, what's next, what can we do differently? How can we do better? And so invariably, that made me the favorite business partner of the IT function, because I was willing to champion technology and how we can leverage that to really create more distinctive business value. And as I was in the strategy role, building out a series of execution projects. So we have a function we call Catalyst, which is our transformation function. And that team is responsible for the biggest projects, the most complex that we have inside of Wilbur Ellis. And invariably, almost 100% of those involve technology in some way, shape, or form. So I was already pretty involved with the IT team to begin with. So when we reorged the company here a little bit ago, made sense to bring that under my purview.
Yeah. When you explained what it is you do, it sounded like three different jobs to me. Does it feel like that?
It feels like that mostly. There is an overlap in the center, but it's not as much as you'd want it to be from a Venn diagram perspective. But if you kind of rewind the tape a little bit to when I joined Wilbur a couple of years ago, one of the things we did as part of our 100th anniversary celebration was take a step back and look at where are we going as a company And that activity that we did, engaging the board, et cetera, really highlighted a couple decisions. Two, I'll call it no regrets moves. One is we need to invest in data. Data and digital is going to be a bigger and bigger part of how we operate, but also how the industry operates. We need to invest there. We also need to be working on our supply chain capabilities and how we use technology to be more efficient to serve our customers. And then the third is we wanted to make more of an investment in digital grower solutions because we felt like we had a role to play to help growers leverage data and technology to make better, faster, more valuable decisions on farm. And so all three of those activities, it might sound familiar, end up being a part of my role today. So it really stems from that strategy activity that happened right when I joined. And then over the last couple of years, it sort of manifested into what sounds like three different jobs, but really has a thread there that they're all about the long-term success of the company, growth areas, where we see the industry growing, et cetera. So I have kind of that horizon 2-3 part of the company.
Yeah, it is a big job. You know, you mentioned celebrating 100 years, which has got to be very rare for any ag company, but especially an ag retailer. Or I think of Wilbur Ellis as an ag retailer. Is that how you would describe Wilbur Ellis? And is that how it started?
So great questions. No, it's more than that. But that is how most people think about Wilbur Ellis, because that is how a lot of folks interact with the company. So first of all, your first comment. One out of 200 companies makes 100 years. That's across all industries. So you're talking about 0.5%. So we feel very grateful and humbled to have that background. Now we're shooting for 200. So we'll, you know, well, I won't be around, but hopefully we'll be there at the 200 year celebration. Wilbur Ellis actually started trading fish meal way back in the day. So trading fish meal from the US to Asia. That's really the roots of the company. And it expanded from there. And we, over the years, have been in things like Cannery Row in Monterey. The founders of the company were part of moving that industry to Peru, ultimately exiting that industry, choosing to invest in a specialty chemical company in Asia, so Cannell Brothers, which we've operated up until this last year. And then we got into ag retail. And over the last couple of years, we've been investing steadily in more products businesses, not just distribution. So we, today, our portfolio has ag retail wholesale. It has an ag solutions business, which I just referenced. It's all about innovation. We have Nature's Alpine Solutions, which is a liquid fertilizer company. So we actually manufacture product, and we have an animal nutrition business. So we do value-added products for pet food manufacturers, aquaculture, as well as livestock and kind of dairy farmers, et cetera. So it's a bigger breadth than most people are thinking of, but ag retail is certainly where a lot of folks interact with us. And so therefore that becomes the face.
That makes sense. And I imagine you're probably a little bit biased, but looking forward, is the solutions just a bigger and bigger part of the business?
Yeah, I think so. First, it's kind of looking at that portfolio. So I mentioned we chose to get out of Asia. So we divested Cannell last year. Actually, it's now part of a global company. So we're minority shareholders in the global company rather than fully exiting. It's part of a company called Caldic, because we saw that's where the industry was going. But that gave us a chance to relook at our portfolio and say, you know what? The rest of our businesses are really coalescing and focused around agriculture in North America, particularly at the front end of the value chain, right? So closest to the grower. So what do we want to be there? And they're much more definitive. Yes, we're doing distribution from a retail perspective, but there's a huge services piece to that and a products piece to that. And so really, it's more of a shift of the whole portfolio to be more balanced amongst those three. And the solutions piece is really about providing focus for that innovation investment. We have a venture capital company called Cavallo that we have the opportunity to get a good look at some of the new tech that's coming our way. And, you know, a lot of our suppliers also have new technology that they want to bring to market, and we have our own. And so how do we pull that together in the right and make decisions and curate innovations for growers and really help build that portfolio or at least make it easier for growers to lean into what's coming next in a way that's pragmatic on their farm? And that's really how we think of the business now and what are some of the opportunities we've got for us.
It sounds like a really complex business. I mean, as far as, you know, having the services component, obviously, you know, you're operating at a very large scale. It just seems like there's a lot of moving parts. Does it feel that way?
there are a lot of moving parts, but sometimes you get to take a step back and say, fundamentally, we're all about raising food, right? And helping what is a fundamental industry for the world, right? At the core, that's what we're doing. And so how we do that, we want to be part of the biggest decisions growers have to make. You know, what am I going to plant? How am I going to raise that crop? How can I make sure that what I'm doing is valuable so that I can sell it on for the right price? How am I keeping my land healthy and making sure that my business is sustainable so I can hand it down to the next generation? How am I responding to what's happening inside of the industry? So fundamentally, it's really about that customer orientation. So that's true whether that's a crop agriculture farmer or whether that's in animal nutrition. If you start with the customer, it gets a little more simple to at least to explain. Their jobs aren't getting any easier. They're only getting more complicated. But for us to really serve that customer effectively, we have to be able to manage some of that complexity for them so that it's not quite so overwhelming. And that's really kind of how the company coalesces. It's only complicated because the way agriculture operates, it's very distributed, it's micro markets, it's very local, hyper localized. That creates the complexity is really more about, but that's our problem to solve, not the customer's problem to solve.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure as part of your role, you think about how to think about innovation quite a bit, you know, how you all are approaching innovation. And for a 100-year-old company, even a 100-year-old innovative company, there's probably got to be a very deliberate approach to here's how we're going to be innovative. Are my suspicions accurate? And how would you describe how you approach innovation?
Yeah. So honestly, it's part of our DNA. So starting from the beginning, Wilbur Ellis has been a company that's been interested in taking risks and being more innovative. You talk about trading at your roots. Invariably, you're interested in taking risk and seeing where that pays off. But then the decisions that have been made over the years to get into businesses, out of businesses, invest in new areas, you know, take risk around what's new has been embedded. And I think now one of the things that's an interesting dichotomy to manage is that we have this, I would say, DNA, even across our different locations, that wants to find new entrepreneurial ways of doing things. At the same time, we're a company with size and scale that also has to be efficient to be able to deliver for customers. And how do you keep that natural balance where people are embracing the innovation at the same time, making sure that we can do it at scale? That's really, I think, the most challenging part. So we don't have an overly prescriptive innovation approach, but what we do have is a focus on the customer and a willingness to lean in and to place bets. And so pulling that together into something more structured and more cohesive for our customers is really what the Ag Solutions business is all about. And that business line we just created about 5 months ago.
So, yeah. And has it already evolved?
It's evolving. You know, one of the hypotheses we had was around our digital solutions. And we had a number of different investments that were across the company. And we decided to pull those together under digital solutions, part of this new organizational construct. And one of the first things we said is, well, what do we have and what works together? And how does it actually meet the needs of growers? And so we've made decisions to move some investment dollars around, to reshape some of our organization, to invest in new capabilities, to stop doing some things. And all of that has just been in the last, I would say, 8 to 10 months as we were coalescing around this new business. So it's constantly shaping and evolving. And even events like this give us the opportunity to meet new partners, potential partners, hear what's happening in the industry and connect the dots on what we're doing internally.
Cool. Yeah. And on this point about digital and data, Lawrence was talking earlier about the Ag Pilot program. Can you talk about that from your perspective? Is that something that you all are involved with?
It's a very interesting idea. I think we're at a place in our evolution where it might be really good timing for that. And what I mean by that is we have, as part of our digital portfolio and have had, an internal proprietary system called Ag Verdict that helps us manage all of our agronomic information, supports our agronomists, tracks recommendations, provides application information and compliance, does all these things and has done for a while. And so that background or that foundation platform has allowed us to do some things on top of it, right? So Crop Sites, for example, is a product we brought out about a year and a half ago that's grower facing. as a way to help growers visualize what's happening, bringing in multiple sources of data and putting it together in a way where they can actually have insights, make decisions, get value by making real-time decisions in season. And that in and of itself is fantastic. However, on top of that, we have 500 agronomists that are walking the fields every day. Yes, they're leveraging Ag Verdict, but they don't always have time to sort of stop and type things in. And, you know, they're calling somebody who's typing things in. And as we're thinking about how to help them be more effective and work with our growers, something like Ag Pilot, where they can use that interface, you know, native language interface, to be able to get the information they need around the grower and the history and what might be happening in a county and how that applies to that particular grower. It's just an easy way for them to engage in that technology, which might be more practical if you think about the rural environment which we operate than somebody who's sitting behind a desk with a keyboard looking this information up.
I think what you just said right there, I finally get it. As far as like voice, like I finally get why we would be so excited about things like these natural language models, where it's like, okay, we can digitize the observations of a busy agronomist or crop consultant out in the field, because they could just talk to it like it was their assistant.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And a lot of folks, that's how they, you know, do business. You're driving around in the truck, you're on the ground, you're walking the field, you're using your phone, you're taking pictures, you know, as you're crop scouting. And if you could translate that more easily, those observations, into the technology that can help you then solutionize that, that's the part that's interesting.
Yeah. Makes so much sense. My mom used to be a medical transcriber, which luckily she's not anymore, because I can't imagine that job still exists. But I always wondered, you know, I'd ask her, like, why would a doctor just sit there and talk, you know, rather than just typing it themselves, how to pay someone else to type it? And it's because, yeah, first of all, who wants to do that? Yeah. Second of all, they're just busy, and that's not the highest, best use of their time. Same thing with somebody out in a pickup scouting fields. That was very cool. So part of this is talking about kind of working with Headstorm, or work you've done with Headstorm. And we just talked about Ag Pilot. Is that kind of the main work you've done with them, or is there something else we should be talking about?
No, actually, we started working with them a number of months ago as part of this digital solutions journey. We call it our digital North Star. So really, where is it that we're going as a company, and how are we making decisions to deliver against that need for our customers? And as we were going down the path, we had this point where we had to, you know, we had really great hypothesis, really great information from growers. We think we have an opportunity here. We really can help make a difference. And that doesn't always mean you can bring it to market, right? And so we had to do a technology feasibility look and say, yeah, we want to do this. It makes sense. We see the market potential. We have a channel. What we don't know is, are we trying to do something that's just technically too hard to do? Can we actually do it? How expensive would it be? That kind of thing. And so Headstorm has been a great partner that we brought in to help evaluate the technology roadmap for that and to give us some information on feasibility. Are we trying to take on too much? Is what we're talking about even doable? Can we afford it? All of those sorts of things. And they really have helped us basically think through the strategic choices we were making and then how that impacts our technology development and making that idea real. And they helped us kind of chart out that roadmap and make sure that's something we could do. And then since then, we've asked them to help us also just take a look at Wilbur Ellis as we're evolving our enterprise architecture. So how are we using applications and systems and solutions internally? Because they had already done a deep dive in this one piece, we asked them to help us take a look across the board. And so that's actually how the Ag Pilot discussion happened, because they knew that we were looking at things like deploying technology to help our agronomists. Well, if you're going to do that, wouldn't it be great if you had this interface on top of it?
Right. What do you hear from your agronomists about technology or ag tech? I'm sure a lot of that stays within the company, but I'm just curious. A lot of times we ask for the farmer perspective, but the agronomist has to live with it just as much as the farmer does. So what do you hear from them about either needs or feedback about the technology that's hitting them?
Really interesting question. I was just with a group of our agronomist leaders here actually earlier today, and we were having a discussion around digital and solutions and where we're going as a company. And, you know, their questions are the ones that come from growers, but there are also things like, you know, how useful is it? Are we really going to deliver value? Are growers willing to pay for it? Some of those kinds of questions. So the agronomists are hesitant to bring some of these new things because, frankly, the ag tech community has showed up on farm one too many times with something new and novel that was going to change the world.
There's been a lot of false starts.
Yeah, I want to say we've worn out the welcome mat a little bit. And so we have to be really careful, and the agronomists, rightly so, are concerned that we're not wasting the time of their growers, right? And so their questions are really about, is this valuable? And do growers really want this? And I think what they're seeing, you know, agronomists are getting more questions from growers about the technology. The data or the research would tell us that farmers in general are interested in new ideas, innovation, et cetera, and they're willing to test some things. So they have a lot of proclivity to do that. It's that, are they going to pay for it? And is it going to go at scale? That's really the question. And more times I'm getting phone calls from agronomists now because their growers are asking for some of these things that are new and novel. And so that to me is a very positive sign that we're starting to see some of that, not just push, but pull from the marketplace.
Very good point. Yeah. And is it the data piece that gets you most excited about where ag technology is going?
It is, because I think, so this is my observation, but I think the reason farmers have been successful is because they could process, as they're walking through the field, all the variables that are coming at them and had a certain level of experience. They learned it from their father when they were walking the field, or their grandfather, et cetera, where you knew a piece of ground, you understood what was happening, you've seen the patterns of how the weather played out, different pests, things like that. And they could manage these complex biological systems in your head because you're so familiar. Well, as farms are getting bigger, you can't walk every field all the time. You don't have that same innate processing of that biological system in your brain. You just can't. So how you can bring those pieces of information in a different way so that you can make those really important decisions, I think is the piece that's really shifted that need for that in the market. And so to me, the data is really exciting, because if you can get that, then farmers can apply their expertise over bigger and bigger operations in new ways. And that really drives value. I think over the last, you know, if I think about what's changed or where we're going, well, of course, AI, I think, is on the agenda topic of almost every session that's to go around. And I, like everybody else, have gotten phone calls from, you know, the board or whomever going, what are we doing with Gen AI? To me, it's not about Gen AI, because you can't use the tool if it doesn't sit on good data, right? So it starts with the data foundation. But the thing that has shifted is you had a lot of, call it, technology coming to agriculture and thinking we're going to completely upend the system. And now I think we've evolved to say, okay, it's not just, you know, a startup coming to middle America to the farm ground that's going to change the whole dynamic. No, it's actually, it's more complex than that. And what's really going to change the dynamic is when people with different technology ideas come together and bring something more cohesive to the grower where it makes sense. And that shift from, you know, kind of a one and done unicorn type business model to a collaborative ecosystem approach, I think is the shift that to me is most exciting, because that's how we're going to be able to help solve the needs of the farmer. It's not a unicorn. It's very much pulling the pieces together in the right way.
Very interesting. Well, I know you focus a lot on innovation and a lot of it's digital, but what about things like biologicals? Does that fall under your purview as well?
Yeah. So what we call sustainable grower solutions, and we're again, this is a new area of the company, kind of putting emphasis on it. Similar story though, pulling together things that we've already got and making it easier to digest and bringing it to growers that care. And so in that space, there's a couple things. One is this portfolio curation of options. We have a proprietary products business, has a big biologicals component to it. These are products we know, we've tested, we've licensed, we produce, we feel really good about. Then we have, you know, our partnerships with some of the big R&D players. They've obviously, you know, folks like Corteva have put a lot of money in this space. They have products that are interesting, exciting to bring to market. Then there's some of these startup technologies. So we have an investment in a company called Cedron that's working to bring liquid fertilizer, organic, at scale. So if you think about that, working, you know, putting a plant next to a huge dairy farm and converting manure into sources of nitrogen, but doing it in a way that it's stabilized and you can transport it and you can produce at scale. That's pretty interesting and at the right cost. And so we have a mix of what are we going to bring that's new and novel, where we have, you know, commercial opportunities to be the go-to-market route. What are we going to bring that's kind of part of our proprietary set of products that are proven and in the marketplace? And what are we going to bring to support, you know, to bring some of those bigger R&D company investments to market? If you combine all of that, that's a pretty significant portfolio. Now we just need to make sure that we can make it easy to engage in that for growers that care.
A lot of strategic questions, I'm sure, to be answered, right? When should we invest? When should we develop? When should we offer other people's products? That's got to be a constant conversation on your agenda, I imagine.
Absolutely. But that's why I have a great team, and that's their day job, is to help us think through that, build those relationships, understand what's out there, and really make sure we're making good bets.
Great. Well, I mean, we've kind of been talking about this the whole time, but I usually end on the question, you know, if we have the same interview again 5 years, what are we going to be talking more about that we're not talking about today? I imagine we could connect that to a lot of the things we've already discussed, but anything else you'd want to add to that?
I hope we've moved beyond the data piece at that point, and we're talking about predictive analytics and whether they work or not, or the actual interface, the human interface with the technology, and how we're making it even easier for farmers to engage in maybe the sophisticated data science that happens underneath. That's what I'm hope we're talking about in 5 years. So we're past kind of the foundation and we're more towards the application.
On the data piece, is it like a puzzle where it's like, hey, we really figured out, you know, let's say yield data. We've figured out that piece, but we haven't figured out, you know, soil data and how to link it up with the other piece. Is that what it's like? Because it does seem like we've been talking about it nonstop forever. What's it going to take to get to that point?
First, it was data capture. And we were talking about that. You know, nobody wants to input data into a system. Now we have all kinds of ways to capture data that doesn't require somebody using a keyboard. But now it's how do we harmonize it and connect it? So it is like a puzzle, but it's a puzzle where you're trying to, you got 100-piece puzzle pieces, 1,000-piece puzzle pieces. They're not the same size, and you're trying to hook them up, right? So that
you've
notion.
You've got multiple puzzles.
Yeah, you got multiple puzzles, and you got to make them all fit. And that's the problem. So how you harmonize and make sure that you can connect the different pieces of data, that's the problem we're trying to solve now. So while it's data, it's still data, it's not data capture, it's actually bringing the data together from disparate sources, because there is no one and done.
Yeah. And it seems like, a company can do that, but a company can't do that for all of agriculture. So it's got to be a bit of a combined effort.
Absolutely. And that's why this is my favorite part of this, is thinking about the ecosystem and where you can work together. So discussions with Microsoft and their ADMA platform, and what could that do from a data harmonization perspective, and Bayer, and what are they investing in, and, you know, startups who are trying to tackle the data space. And I don't want to have to solve the data space. I want to do the stuff that, you know, I want to get to the things you can do with the data. So how to make those decisions, how to help the grower be faster, smarter, better at what they do every day.
All right. Well, that is a great note to end today's episode on. Thank you very much to Amy Tasing for taking the time during a busy week in San Francisco at World AgriTech for this interview. If you'd like to learn more about Wilbur Ellis, I can include a link to their website in the show notes. Thank you as well to our quarterly presenting sponsor, which is Headstorm. We'll leave a link in the show notes for their website as well. And last but never least, thank you for your time and your attention. I don't take it lightly. I'll be back next week with another story of ag innovation.